When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another captaincy video and podcast from Fantasy Football Scout. It's another full round of fixtures and another week with plenty of choice. It's not just a full round of fixtures, we've got an extra match. My name is Joe and joining me to find the best captaincy options for game week 32 is David. David, how are you?
Yeah, very good, thanks. I had a good week in FPL, which is quite a rare occurrence this season. 70 points on my wild card, I'm up 100k places, so I'm in a buoyant mood. The funny thing is, probably one of my worst decisions was to go for a 1 week punt on Raheem Sterling and captain him, and that didn't pay off. And here we are asking me for my captaincy opinions, you know, how ironic. You know, we talked last week about how largely if you were going to captain a Man City player, it was going to come down to who was going to start. So that's why I went Sterling, as said. Bit of a 1 week punt, because I need to make a transfer this week anyway, because I'm going to free hit in 33. Okay. So it was an easy switch to get a Spurs asset. And as I said, it's so much nicer this week to be looking at a much smaller pool of players for the captaincy. Largely, Spurs, because they're the only team with double game week.
It's actually only one. We're only going to look at one player. No, we're not really. We will. I think part of this is not... I mean, Kane with a double game week is the obvious choice. And I would not persuade anyone not to do that. But there are other options. But just like some, you know, a murder mystery on TV, sometimes you know who the killer is. You want to know why. You want to know why they did it or how they did it. And so that's what we want to know with Kane. Why should we captain him? And are we making...
You want to hear them do the evil voice. That's
We want to hear the right... We want to hear the what, why, how, why, where, and all of that. We've got to start with Spurs. So what have we got? We got Kane, double game week, absolutely primed for the golden boot. Incredible season. He's got assists, shots on target, everything we want. He takes on Everton away and then Southampton at home. The best captain, surely. So, why should we be captaining Kane?
Well, should we start with motivation, opportunity, you know, the murder weapon? motivation is probably the easiest one to cover. I mean, devastating result for Spurs last week against Man United, which you could tell from Son's post-match interview. So they need some positive results. This is an opportunity to sort of catch up on people. These sorts of matches, I tend to trust their attacking assets a lot more than I do the United game. Because the thing is, I've seen a few people sort of go, "Oh, you know, Spurs didn't look too good in that game. You know, Mourinho could lose his job. Like, should we really be looking at the Spurs assets?" Well, it's not really that shocking to me that they didn't do too well against Man United, because Man United are now the sort of top six nullifying, or not top six, the big six. The big six nullifying, you know, team experts in that, because they just always, most of the time, limit what they can do. You know, we've talked time and time again about the nil nils they're capable of achieving against Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool. You know, clean sheet against Man City, and they obviously won the game 2-0. So, Solskjaer is turning into a big six match specialist. So well done to him. Completely different story when we're coming up against Southampton and Everton. And I think the handy thing is, of course, that we saw on Monday night that, Southampton are a team that can concede heavily, even to West Brom. I mean, to be fair, West Brom's attack is getting better. But at the same time, which we'll talk about in a second, is that Spurs' attack is still very capable. So to see Southampton concede those goals is really encouraging, unless you're a Southampton fan, of course. So over the last six matches, Southampton's expected goals conceded is 9.78. They've conceded 13, so they've conceded more than they should have done. But even if they concede in line with what they should have done, it's still the fourth worst expected goals conceded in the division. Everton are a little bit better. They are the sixth best for expected goals conceded. But, you know, if you've got a double... The Spurs are the only double game week team, and they've got, you know, the Southampton game. The Everton one is just a bonus, right? So, no concerns for me about the opposition. One other thing I find really interesting about Southampton's defence, actually, is people know that I like to try and see if there's any particularly weak sides for a volume of chances conceded, and I didn't really find one, which doesn't necessarily have to be a problem. But I found that over the last six, that if you sort them for shots conceded down the left, they conceded 17, which is about mid-table. Shots conceded through the centre for Southampton is 14, which actually is like the sixth best. And then for shots conceded down the right, it's 16, which is like the eighth best. But when you look at big chances conceded, they conceded 18, which is the second worst. So when I find a team that isn't really conceding too many shots on a volume level, but is conceding a large number of shots on a quality level, it tells me if they come up against a player who likes to shoot a lot, there's actually like a higher chance that his chances will be big, because it seems to not take too much volume to create quality against this Southampton defence right now. So then when you look at the fact that over the last six, Kane is joint second for shots in the box among all players in the Premier League, behind only Salah. His seven big chances is the joint best, and his 11 shots on target is also the joint best.
Okay.
So it just, that seems like a perfect matchup. And then the Everton game, you know, if he can nick something, which he has demonstrated he has the capability of doing this season, then quid's in, really. Is it stuff you'd like to add, Joe?
I can only add to it with I've got some more recent stats, as in narrowing it to the absolute latest. So we're going last four here. But as you said, with the last six, which is a good barometer there, great barometer to show how potent Kane is and how poor Southampton's defence in particular is. But these are last four matches got up on the screen here. It shows out of all Spurs assets. So what I've done is I've basically, if they've had a big chance, they're in the table. So there's not that many. There's only six of them so far. And this is their last four matches they've played. Kane absolutely top with four. Next best is Son and Bale and Vinicius with two. Aurier and Ali have created a big chance, had a big chance each. In terms of you talk about that volume as well, but look at that, 17 goal attempts in like four matches. I mean, the next best is Aurier with seven. So look, Kane's just in a world of his own. Nine of those inside the box, seven on target. He's scored three goals. And he's having a shot inside the box every 40 minutes. This is his last four. And then you look at Son. So who should we... Is Son a consideration? Sort of, yes. But he's turned more into a bit more of a creator than Kane was. So Kane, chances created, zero. because he's much more attacking now. And is that because he's going for that golden boot? You remember that time when Eriksen had scored a goal, but Kane claimed it, and he claimed on his daughter's life that he'd got it. So he was so desperate for the golden boot, he was putting the lives of his family on it. So this is a guy that really wants that golden boot, and so he's just in shooting mode. So the chances creating, that's being left up to the likes of Aurier, the likes of Son, Bale when he can get on the pitch, Ali when he can get on the pitch. These are the creative people there. Yeah, so that's what I would add, last four really, to that, just backing up everything you've been saying. But I'll put up another table here of my worst defences table, last four, and exactly what you were saying about Southampton. Big chances conceded. Sheffield United still the worst. Crystal Palace, second worst with 16 big chances conceded. And then Southampton. So Southampton are starting to get into that zone. Burnley, another one to target in terms of a porous defence. But then, yeah, you look down at Everton, just six big chances conceded, and that puts them on a par with, say, Leicester, Wolves, one worse than Manchester United, who've only conceded two goals. But yeah, Everton, yeah, six big chances conceded, five goals conceded. So they're, and expected goals conceded for expected goal fans. Everton were expected to concede around five goals. They conceded five goals. This is quite handy for the stats, really, because it shows they're on a par with what they should be doing. But yeah.
The handy thing, obviously, also is that Everton's fixtures have actually been quite nice, largely across that period. Their last six were Brighton, Palace, Burnley, Chelsea, admittedly, West Brom, Southampton. So you kind of expect them, they should be in that area of the table, really. And, you know, when they did play Chelsea, they lost 2-0. So, you know, they're definitely capable of conceding. It's harder for us to sit here and say, oh, it's definitely going to happen. But yeah, it's that sometimes is just a nice little bit of mitigating circumstances, perhaps, to explain why defence has been doing perhaps better than we'd hoped or expected. I suppose I think they're without Mina now, went off injured against Brighton. So then, yeah, the defence is not, yeah, it's not going to be exactly what Ancelotti wants to choose, I imagine. Yeah. Pickford, I think, has been in and out as well. So for me, it's more of a feeling that he can get something against Everton. But it's double game week, so, you know, we all know what we're talking about there. I don't feel like I have to explain that kind of gut feeling too much
more. Yeah. I mean, looking, just going back to those Spurs stats again, some people will say, well, Kane's going to be really well captained. Of course he is. There's triple captaincy chips flying around as well, so his effective ownership is going to be huge. So some people, they would think, well, I'm going to go against that. I'm going to go for Son. I'm going to bet that Son is going to outscore Kane. Therefore, I'm going to get more points and steal a march on there. If you do that, you are betting not just against someone who's going to be well captained, but against a player in Kane who's justifiably well captained. Son is just not getting the volume or the quality of shots, and he's creating some chances. But four chances over four matches isn't great, really. This is his last four. So, Son's an option, but is he a better option than Kane? No.
Yeah, it's the ownership thing is going to be massive as well. I mean, great point of triple captaincy. I've already activated my triple captainship for Kane. Just simply because I think I can't see where there's going to be a better opportunity this year to captain one of the most devastating assets with the stats that we've outlined here. I mean, one other one I hadn't actually included, anyone who's massively into their XG, last six matches, Kane is top for expected goals non-penalty in the whole division. And he also takes penalties. So there's just another thing to chuck in there. Against defences that we think can concede against him, both of them. For me, it's a bit of a no-brainer just with the way that my team's set up and not knowing what double game weeks are going to come. I can't guarantee I'm going to get a better one. So that's quite an easy one for me. But then in terms of, as you said, the effective ownership is going to get massive because of that and also because he's a good asset. So in order to, I guess, preempt that idea, I always like to, you know, if it kind of appears relevant, which I think in this case it does, look at the Fantasy Football Scout captain poll as it currently stands. It's been up for about 24 hours. And at the moment, Kane obviously is top with 78.63% of votes.
That's huge.
Yeah. And so then Son is second with just 8.67%. So the gap even between Kane and Son is like absolutely mammoth. And then third place is Jesse Lingard on 3%. So it really is. You have to be so brave to go against Kane this week. You really do. I mean, I don't want to say it will be the wrong decision to do it because we've seen people do it before and it work off, but we have to go on what we know now. And this really doesn't feel like a week to go against the grain because the grain seems to kind of be going in the right direction or the obvious direction.
There's weeks to bet against the house and this isn't it, because Kane is good and definitely against Southampton. So if he was against, say, well, let's go back to that worst defences. So if he was against, say, Everton and Wolves or Everton and Leicester, would he be good for a triple captaincy? Would he be the best captain that week? Would Son be better? Well, then I might start thinking about elsewhere. And I might start thinking about single game week players. But Southampton are right up there. So this could be, it could be huge. It could be. I'm not saying it will be, but it could be. And that's what we're looking at here. But looking at that table, big chances conceded. Burnley's still there. Still conceding. They're more of an attacking side now than a defensive side. So we have to alter our thinking about Burnley. And their defence is there for the taking, which makes perhaps single game week players an option. If you definitely want to avoid going for Kane or Son, there are single game week options with great fixtures. And among them is Fernandes. So Burnley against Manchester United. Fernandes has an expected goal involvement of 3 over his last 4, and he's third in terms of chances created. Only KDB and Alexander Arnold have more. Prior to last night's matches, those figures were there, by the way, related to KDB and TAA. Especially since he had 7 shots on target over the last 4, and only Iheanacho, Wood, Lingard and Havertz have had more. So I managed to update that as well. So some of those were prior to last night's matches, but hastily this morning I put up a new table here which shows that Fernandes is to be considered, and if you marry that up with Burnley as well and their defence. But looking at that table there, so I mean, we'll come to some of the other names shortly, but Fernandes, I mean, is he is he in the reckoning for the captaincy? It just can't really compete with Kane.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think so. I actually don't even own Fernandes anymore. I took a big risk on my wild card and sold him so that I could have Salah, Sterling, and then Son. I probably have a window to get him back, and I think I'll be free hitting to have him when they play Leeds, for example, because it's kind of hard to go without him for that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've gone 1 week without Fernandes, and it paid off so far. So I'm loosely in the camp of we could probably go without him for a little bit and get away with it. We'll see. But if you look at his last 6 matches, just for points, it really doesn't make for great reading. It's just 1 assist, 1 goal. The stats, as you say, are relatively decent. I mean, I'm a big fan of shots on target. So, yeah, to see that he's joint second for shots on target over a certain period is good. I suppose the thing with that is that he is more of a distance shooter than, say, Kane, Wood, Iheanacho, Lingard, I think. It's probably halfway between, a distance shooter and a penalty box tapping merchant. But I usually discount shots on target slightly more for those guys that shoot outside the box, like De Bruyne, and I suppose like Yaya Toure, those sorts of players. It's still a useful metric, but it wouldn't sway me on the captaincy, I don't think, bearing in mind that Kane has the same number of shots on target as him over the last 4, but, he's got, more in the box, like considerably more. His XG is higher as well. And I suppose the interesting thing is, Fernandes is kind of getting to the point where penalties do play a big part of whether or not he's going to get something, and can you legislate for that? Not always. I think you can, in weeks where you're uncertain and you own Fernandes, captaining him's not a bad bet because they might get a penalty and then you get 10 points, right?
Yeah.
But when you pair that against Kane with 2 games, loads of volume, loads of quality in the box, it's not really a comparison. And so then, over the last 6 matches, Bruno Fernandes' XG non-penalty is 0.85. His minutes per expected goal is 157.8, which is about the 25th best in the division. We've got people like Maja, Welbeck, Jacob Murphy, Havertz, Aubameyang, Wood, Origi, Pulisic, Jesus, Pepe, Dwight Gayle. All these people, they have a better minutes per expected goal involvement than Fernandes, who is underperforming against it. So his XGI delta is minus 1.41. So we know he's a quality player, but right now he just seems to be experiencing a slight dip in form, which I suppose naturally had to come because nobody can sustain that over a prolonged... He was able to sustain it longer than most because he's a quality player, but we appear to be approaching a bit of a dip right now. That said, Burnley is a great fixture. I reckon he can get something in this game, but I can't captain him. Over Kane, I just can't do it.
Okay, let's move through some of those other names as well, because these are all valid alternatives. Jesse Lingard, he cannot stop scoring. But he's against Newcastle, so could be a great option. What we spoke about last week was we were a bit concerned how he would fare without Antonio. It seems like he can do pretty well. But now they've got a fair, how will he do without Cresswell, for example? Chances are he might do well. Lingard, an option against Newcastle for the captaincy?
But if this was a single game week and Spurs were just playing Everton, or as you said, if Spurs had a double against 2 not so great teams for targeting defence, I would be seriously considering Lingard because he just looks so good. On the Cresswell thing, I don't think we need to worry too much about that because since Masuaku came back, they've gone back to playing largely with, it's not exactly a back three, but it often is a back three. So Cresswell is nowhere near as marauding as he was before, and those duties have been left to Masuaku. So I think he'll be fine without him. Bowen is in fantastic form as a different type of centre forward to Antonio, but still effective. More with his runs than his physical presence. Still makes a difference. There's been so much talk in the community about can Lingard sustain what he's doing because his XG doesn't match up with what he's doing. Lingard, for starters, wouldn't be the first guy to consistently overachieve against his XG. If someone is truly world class, which some people will tell you Jesse Lingard is, then they can do that. But I've got to be honest, I've not actually looked at his XG at all the whole time I've owned him, and I've owned him like four, maybe five game weeks. I got him maybe two or three games into his hot streak. And the reason why is because one of the tables I often use, I mean, I use XG. I love XG. It's one of my favourite stats to use. You have to use it in conjunction with other things. Is that I'm quite a fan of shots on target.
Yeah.
Not, again, in isolation, but one of my tables that I have shots in the box, big chances, and shots on target together, right? And so then when I'm looking at my transfers, I'll sort those three columns and see if there's anyone who's in the top two or three for maybe two or three of those three metrics. And what the, so yes, Lingard looks like he's overachieving, but actually the base kind of like data that he's overachieving against is still solid. So even if Lingard regresses from double digit hauls every game week, he's still operating on, I think, a sustainable and solid base of shots in the box, big chances, and shots on target. So in the last six, he's joint second for shots on target in the whole league. So it tells you that, well, yeah, even if he's shooting from places where the XG is low, you fancy him to get it in the net. And we've seen that consistently now over nine games. But also, he's had five big chances, which is the joint third highest. So if we're worried about the quality of his chances, well, you know, compared to everyone else, it's still pretty decent. But then also, he's persistent in his shots as well, because, yeah, his 11 shots in the box is the joint fourth. Sorry, the 13 shots in the box is the joint fourth best. So I'm not going to captain him this week because Kane is you know, a big deal. But a lot of this kind of idea that Lingard is going to fizzle out at some point, yeah, maybe he's going to regress. But in terms of the quality of his chances, they're still good enough for you to own him. And maybe, you know, captain him at a later point when Spurs aren't playing.
I think some of the people that do support that, the XG stats, can go a bit too far with it, really, in thinking that it's... I mean, all of these stats here are stats of previous form that we use as a predictor of future form. But I think for some people think XG is magic and that it is the predict. It is somehow got a crystal ball and is actually telling you what's going to happen. And it's not. It's just simply amalgamating other stats and pulling them together and looking at quality of the chances that they've had. But if you look at it, yeah, I mean, we've seen this before with the likes of Vardy. You know, certain stats metrics. So Vardy might not have had so many shots on target, but he's got three goals from three shots on target in six matches. How has that happened? Well, that's just certain players do that. And Lingard, yeah, I mean, on face value, his expected goal involvement of two and a bit goals, yet he's scored five, yet he's had eight shots on target, and 10 of those have been inside the box, 10 of his shots. Makes me think XG is not actually a good metric with Lingard. And I mean, it's not a good metric of how he has been performing. And as you said, shots on target is, because that's more accurate. That's what's been happening. He's been shooting on target and scoring.
Yeah. Well, shots on target is a metric that isn't actually included in XG. It just isn't. So that's why if I had to pick two stats to operate from for the rest of my life, I probably would go with XG, but I would also have to include it with shots on target, because XG is a way of amalgamating the opportunities they've had. Shots on target is a way of quantifying how good they are at converting those. So, for example, like David McGoldrick would often have relatively high XG stats, but his shots on target would be really low. Or every now and then he'd get a few shots on target, but his goal conversion would be low. You have to combine the two, because XGI will roll up. So XG will roll up shots in the box. It will roll up big chances and put all that together. XGI will then obviously factor in you know, key passes and the quality of the passes created, but as I said, absolutely none of that tells you how XG becomes goals. So that's why shots on target is so important, and that's just why if I ever see anyone operating consistently at the top end of shots on target in the league, I tend to sign them up. And so I had a wild card this week, so I had the opportunity to sign as many as I wanted to. And over the last six matches, the top four for shots on target in the league, Harry Kane, who admittedly didn't score this week, but we think he's a good option. Chris Wood, who I snapped up, got an assist, but should have scored as well. Iheanacho, bagged a brace. Lingard, brace. You know, Havertz, eight shots on target, brace. Pereira, eight shots on target. He hauled against Southampton. So players who do well often, you know, if they're showing that they can consistently hit shots on target, it's kind of like law of averages. The more shots on target you're throwing at the goal, the more chances you are you're going to score. It sounds really simple and obvious, but for me, that's the key with Lingard. And so then there's going to be, I'm sure there'll be a time between now and the end of the season, provided he's still hitting these kind of numbers, that shows that he's got a very good ability to convert XG, even low XG, into goals, then I'm probably going to captain it at some point, but just not when Spurs are playing twice.
Okay. We'll just rattle through some of these other names just quickly then. So we've got Iheanacho. Yeah, I mean, both of us got him on wildcard. Lots of other wildcarders did too. And immediate returns there. Looking great. Looking like the Leicester player to get rather than Vardy. So, yeah, he's against West Brom. But however, West Brom, looking at the defences table, they're sort of mid-table. In fact, they're almost, one of the best defences at the moment. So possibly not for captaincy. Should put it that way. Havertz against Brighton. Once again, Brighton, they're not like right up there with City like they were for, a couple of weeks ago for their defences. But the last four as well, they've only conceded five big chances. So perhaps not Havertz this time around for the captaincy. Mahrez and KDB. So looking at the fixtures, City against Villa. Going back to that defences table. Villa are sort of getting there in terms of being a bad defence, but they're not quite there yet. So perhaps not there. And you mentioned Pereira as well at West Brom. and so looking at the fixtures, Leicester against West Brom. I mean, if you like to captain the player who's playing on the final day, some people do that. There we go. Pereira against Leicester. Leicester just conceded to West Ham, and they've got another West side coming to see them. I don't know. I mean, any of those appeal, or anyone else for those who don't want to go for Kane?
I mean, I think of those, Iheanacho is probably the one I prefer. If I'm, you know, looking for my differential of the week, I suppose, outside of the ones we've already discussed. Yes, West Brom's defence has been improving. They should have conceded more goals than they have, from what I can see. So last six matches, expected goals conceded of 9.34. Slightly worse than what you mentioned, which obviously shows that if they're performing better over the last four than last six, they are improving. But their XG delta, so they should have conceded 5.3 goals more than they have, because they only conceded four over the last six. So there's coming a point where that maybe reverts to the mean. And so then if they're going up against a guy who already kind of touched upon his statistical form, very impressive. Last six matches for Iheanacho, 14 shots in the box, 7 big chances, 10 shots on target. And, you know, what is also quite interesting, really, for him is just how he's just so far ahead of Vardy. It's not even close. Like, a lot of people had the choice to go between Vardy and Iheanacho on the wildcard, and sometimes it can be easy to assume the more expensive guy is the one who's better to go with. But I would always draw people to the Fantasy Football Scout premium members area to really ascertain, you know, like, who's the better option. Because, yeah, last six, 14 shots in the box for Iheanacho, 6 for Vardy. And that's for fewer minutes from Iheanacho as well. Not massively fewer, but still fewer. 7 big chances for Iheanacho, 3 for Vardy. 10 shots on target for Iheanacho, joint second best in the division, and just 3 for Vardy. So Iheanacho is miles ahead of Vardy now as the you know, spearhead for the Leicester attack. So that's my 2 cents on him. I think his stats are good enough for him to get something against West Brom. But as we said, general gist is it's got to be Kane. It just has to be Kane.
Yeah, I mean, people might say, oh, why aren't you mentioning Liverpool? Well, Liverpool against Leeds, we saw what Leeds did to Man City. Leeds' defence is actually, people can look at all season XG as much as they like with Leeds. They are currently an okay defence. And that makes them not one of those defences you want to target. So there, Leeds there conceded 4 big chances. They're better okay. They're one of the best defences at the moment on current form. So they're against the Liverpool side, who aren't as free scoring as perhaps they could be. So Salah and Jota could be options if you're that way inclined. But the defence they're playing, the current form says they are nowhere near as good as Kane with 2 fixtures. And I guess that's where, you know, I mean, that has to be the beginning, the middle, the conclusion. Captain Kane, he's the best. He's got 2 fixtures, and one of them is against a really bad defence. Yeah, I think we'll have to leave it with that one. Please do press like if you've enjoyed this video, and remember to subscribe to keep up to date with our latest videos and podcasts wherever you receive them. Also remember our members area. David mentioned some of the, where those stats come from. They come from the members area of Fantasy Football Scout, all Opta driven, and if you're an XG nut, you can go mad in there. But if you like the more analog, basically confidence shots on target, we also have a look at measuring those as well. But in the meantime, David, good luck with your captaincy decision of Kane.
Well, I mean, bearing in mind we're captaining the same person, I hope your captain comes off for you as well.
Cheers.